It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into the Batter Up podcast. Caleb Johnson here with Joe Patrick. Joe, we're back and baseball is back.
We're back. The music's playing. It's been so long since we've done one of these, Caleb. You already screwed up the intro once. So give the readers a glimpse behind the curtain. This is take two.
No, I know. I am not one take Drake today. I'm quite disappointed in myself, but it's what happens. Go ahead.
Well, I was just joking with you before we started. I'm so glad that you're the one who has to do the little intro thing, because I always screw it up whenever I have to do it for any of my other podcasts. So I'm just glad you're the one who's kind of biting the bullet here.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to get all the ideas together and just kind of get the people excited right off the bat. I blame the fact that I'm not one take Drake today on it took 99 days for Major League Baseball to work through this stupid agreement to finally get baseball back, and it's not happening on time. It's frustration and hair pulling and all of these different emotions that I feel like have happened along the way. And then, Joe, I don't know how you feel, but it was just like it felt like we were in the middle of another set of circumstances where the two sides, Players Association and the owners, were in disagreement. And it felt like, yep, we're going to ride this thing again, and it's going to be another couple of weeks before we get back to serious conversations. And then you send me a text as I'm hanging out with my dad. Baseball's back. Like, just agreement happened. It happened.
Yeah. It's a really interesting one, because I was, to be perfectly honest, not following very closely, like, the line item by line item negotiations that were happening.
Me either.
It was just a little too much, and I don't want to be like reading legal stuff like all day every day. Just not something I'm very much interested in. I don't think many of our listeners are as well. But, you know, I got this sense of negativity from Twitter, I think, like, from baseball fans. There just seemed to be like a big time, like, downer attitude about it all. And I gotta say, I was one of those people, because I saw how the negotiations for the COVID season went. There was even, you know, I don't know if you would call them negotiations. I guess so, you would, before last season, because there was still some COVID issues and MLB wanted to push the season back. And MLB players came out and said that, like, no, we want to go out there. MLB was saying they want to do it for the health and safety of the players. So, like, there was, like, all this bickering back and forth. And that's what gave me no confidence that this season was going to get started on time, which, of course, it's not. But to hold my hands up, I thought this was going to go way longer than it did. I've been kind of joking with you. I felt like the owners would see Memorial Day as this, like, perfect American holiday to start the baseball season with all the pageantry and the bunting and everything. So that's kind of what I was kind of pinning my expectations on, so I'm pretty happy to see how this all turned out.
Well, it's funny that you say that about Memorial Day, because I was back on the idea of, no, this thing could go deep into the summer, because if you remember during that COVID shortened season, there was conversations about, oh, Memorial Day, that's a great day to bring baseball back. 4th of July, mm-hmm. What, you know, American. Yeah, let's do it. Let's bring baseball. And both of those passed the season, you know, or through the calendar year before baseball was like, oh, we'll just kind of limp into August and get it going. And so I didn't think it was going to wait until August. I didn't think we were going to deal with like a 70-game season like the COVID shortened season. But if you told me a Memorial Day, or if you had gone all the way up until 4th of July, I wouldn't have been that surprised if it took that long to get baseball started, just because of what we were seeing. Now, and I know you're right, the Twitter was very frustrated, and I saw some very interesting tactics played out by both sides. However, mm-hmm. I'm always going to be a pro player guy. I don't know, it's just in my nature, I guess. And so I tend to also look more at the pro player media Because whether, I mean, you can say media is unbiased, but we absolutely, through this, saw reporters who took ownership side and reporters who took player side, because that's who they were talking to. That's who they were getting their quotes from. And so when I was seeing this whole idea of the two sides meeting, and then essentially at the 11th hour, the owners being like, well, now that we're almost to an agreement, also take this. You also have to you know, take this part of the deal, that players would then go, whoa, 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 why are you adding stuff on right at the end?
Right, right.
This latest one being the international draft that was thrown in kind of last minute as this, like, you know, I thought we were about to get to a place of agreement and you add something else to it. And so when I kept seeing all of those things, I was like, there is no way that this is happening anytime soon. And then, and just, I guess, funny, perfect timing for baseball is just on a random Thursday, just in late in the afternoon. It's just kind of like after a day where one of baseball's biggest media members gets his Twitter account hacked, Jeff Passan, you know, is out here tweeting about NFTs, and then we get baseball back, and it feels, if I'm honest with you, Joe, it feels so anticlimactic to this whole scenario, but I'm also at the same time, I am truly excited that we get to have the sport back, and we also get to have the Braves as reigning World Series champs kick things off first week of April.
Yeah, if you would have told me a month ago that we were going to have an agreement on March 10th and the season was going to get started on April 7th and they were going to play a full 162 game season, I actually would have said you were crazy. Like, that, yep, there's absolutely no way that was going to happen. So again, that's where I come back to, like, I'm very happy with the outcome of where we stand. I'm still annoyed that these two sides, it took all of this to finally get going. But, you know, you talk about being surprised, Caleb, and, you know, I don't know if I'm jumping too far ahead here, but on what we want to talk about today, but you got to wonder if the player representation that was in the room was also surprised at what happened yesterday, because one of the big pieces of news that came out following the news that the lockout was over was that the player leadership executive committee, I forget what the actual name of it is, the union executive board, I guess is what they call it.
Yeah.
Voted 8-0 against this proposal. Then they sent the proposal to the clubs, which voted 26-4 in favor of it. So I mean, that is shocking that you would have leadership that is runs so counter to the wants and desires of the people that they're there to represent. Not a good look for those eight, and just not a good look for the union, I think, in general. And I forget what I was going to say after that, but it was a shocking piece. It was a shocking piece of news that really, I think, and maybe this is why I was so, like, pessimistic, and why Twitter and the baseball fans in general were so pessimistic about a deal getting done, which is because these eight are kind of who we were hearing from. Like, this was our idea of what the players were thinking about these various deals. So we actually heard, I don't think a lot of people expected this deal to actually be approved, because you know, what we were hearing was that the union executive board was not in favor of it. So you just assume that would be representative of the wider base of players, but obviously not the case, and not even close. I mean, it wasn't even a close vote.
Yeah, well, something that you and I had touched on through text message as this was all unveiled and we found out a deal had been reached, and then the fact that, yeah, the entire union board voted against it, led by Max Scherzer. Everyone on that board is making a lot of money. And then the four player reps for their respective teams were from the Mets, the Yankees, the Astros, and the Cardinals. I mean, those are four pretty established teams that have pretty substantial size payrolls. And so I think, if I'm honest, because I saw a lot on Twitter and just social media in general about, kind of, you know, oh, let's put the clown nose on Max Scherzer because clearly these guys, and even Joe, I know you and I had kind of discussed about, you know, are the, is the union board out of touch with the rest of the players? However, I just wonder if those guys who have a bunch of money, you know, they've made their money and they have more money to make in the future, if they are able to see past just the money, you know, like and obviously they were negotiating over a lot of things that related to money, but it was the idea of the, like, the here and now, the, you know, do we want to reach a deal right now where we're going to have to give up a lot of stuff, but in the short term, well, we get baseball back, and so everybody gets their paychecks, you know, and no one's really missing a check sort of thing. And that's why it always gets discussed in every labor negotiation. You hear about union reps who go the year before a CBA is about to expire, and you hear union reps talk about, save up your money, save up your money, save up your money. And you know, like, players never do it. I mean, the players who are making a ton of money, sure. But you also have plenty of guys who haven't made it yet, quote unquote, kind of thing. And so they are, in some ways, living paycheck to paycheck, even though, you know, their scale might be larger than ours.
Right.
But it's like, you have to take all of those things into account. And so I just wonder if we got to a point where the guys who weren't in the rooms daily having these negotiations and hearing ownership's side and what was all happening on the bargaining side of things, if those player reps were like, look, the deal's good enough, let's just get this thing done and get back to playing, when the union reps maybe know that, hey, in 5 years, which is, I assume that's how long this deal goes, I actually haven't looked to see, but whenever this deal runs 10. Up, okay, 10, but so
maybe it's 5, I don't know.
But are the players going to be looking in 5 or 10 years, whenever this deal runs up, going like, oh man, we really missed out on some opportunities for some things that we should have fought harder for, which seems like it happens at the end of every CBA. And so that's all I wonder is, while everyone's out with their 10 caps on talking about, oh, well, out of the 8 that voted no, I think 5 of them are repped by Scott Boras, who was also correct. Against this deal. Mm-hmm. And so, like, oh, you know, they're just doing what their agent tells them. And it's like, no, potentially they just have, they're just pushing harder. They just want more for the players in the sport. And maybe it's an unrealistic thing to reach, but that's all I'm concerned about when I see stuff on social media about, like, these guys are really, you know, like, fighting over these little things that are going to help. Because one of them was the luxury tax, mm-hmm. getting that kind of relaxed. That was what the players were fighting for, so guys like Max Scherzer and others can make bigger deals. I don't know. It's just one of, like, there's just so much that goes into all of that stuff that it's potentially a bad look that the union executive board all voted against this deal, but the players had enough say to make it go through, or they were just pushing harder and the players, Max Fried, one of, you know, the Braves player rep, voted in favor of this deal. Maybe those guys just saw too much opportunity being missed by voting against it.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, the club vote, so that's the 26-4 vote in favor of this collective bargaining agreement that pushed it through. So, like, in the Braves case, Max Fried is the team rep, and he will usually take a poll. It won't just kind of be his opinion or that player's opinion from every team. It will kind of be they will poll the entire team and get a feel, and just, you know, however that vote comes out, that's the way that they will then filter up filter their vote up through the rest of the process. So, and you're right, by the way, I wanted to correct this right away. It is a 5-year CBA. Okay. A lot of the times these CBAs are for 10 years in a lot of sports, but 5 years in this for this one, which is means what we're going to have to deal with this again in 5 years, but that's okay. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to complain right now. But, you know, I think that really what it shows is that here's my concern with this whole 8-0 vote, which is that I'm concerned that, like, none of those 8 were willing to, like, break the mold, like, to break part from the other 7 or 2 from the other 6 or whatever, because you obviously, if you're a union, you want to kind of have solidarity in what you're doing and everything. But I worry that in negotiations like this, that quote unquote solidarity can just lead to some irrational decision making because you are trying to, you know, fight for everything that you want. But again, I think that this vote shows that a lot of players didn't think that they needed to fight for whatever it was that they were, you know, trying to get. I mean, when you look at what this CBA brings the players, I think it's a good deal. It increases the base rate of pay. And think about this. The base rate of pay is what the majority of players in the league are on. It raises it by like 23% or something, up to 700K, and that's going to rise even more throughout the deal. I want to make sure that 700K number is right. Anyway, it's about a 25% increase in the base rate of pay. That is incredible. Yeah, $700,000 starting this year, rising to $780,000 through the final year. So that's a huge win for so many players in and of itself. And I think that when you think about, you know, what a player wants, they want the cash, they want the money in the bank account. But then they also got other things that they wanted, the $50 million player pool for pre-arbitration players, all this kind of stuff that's just going to make their deal better. So I think it's a good deal for them. Major League Baseball got a 12-team playoff, which I'm not thrilled about, but I mean,
it's better than 14.
I'll take it, I guess. Right, exactly. It's better than 14. It's better than 14. I just feel like, for me personally in baseball, it's like the season is so damn long. You really want to reward the teams that do well through that. But, you know, whatever. 12-team playoff, it'll still be super fun to watch on TV, and the league will make a ton of money from it. The universal DH, though, that's a big one. We were all expecting it, of course, but that's going to be exciting for us to talk about in terms of what the Braves can possibly do here, which we'll do a little bit in this show, and then later down the road as we kind of prep for the season. Bigger bases after 2023, I think, is it second base or all the bases, I guess, that are going to be slightly bigger?
All of them.
We'll be going back to 9-inning doubleheaders. 9-inning doubleheaders and no runner on second base and extra innings, which I don't. I like the pandemic. I like the 7-inning doubleheaders, and I know that Brian Snicker loved the 7-inning doubleheader.
Yeah,
because that's a long day in the sun if you're a player.
Well, and here's where I came back on. I'm fine with going back to the 9-inning doubleheaders. Is just the fact of Major League Baseball never knew what to do with 7-inning games because we had an instance where Madison Bumgarner threw innings, mm-hmm. and then that's not a no-hitter because it was only 7 innings. So it's one of those, if you're not going to change the entire game to 7 innings, only doing it on certain instances was really...
Good point.
I remember
Bumgarner was like, it's not really, like, I can't, like, say it was. Like, even he was kind of poo-pooing it.
But the idea for him, it's going to be frustrating, is like, I could have gone 2 more innings.
Right.
I could have made it, you know?
For sure.
And the fact that he didn't get that opportunity. The one that I'm so glad of that I know a lot of fans liked, I just can't stand because I don't like giving stuff for free. That could also mess with guys' records and stats is the no more runner on second in extra innings. I know it gave the game more excitement once it reached extra innings, because almost always it felt like the shortened season that we got that on top of getting it this past year, it seemed like more runs were getting scored in extra innings. However, it felt like more runs were getting scored equally.
So we were still
going, you know, sometimes 11, 12, 13 innings like we were before, but there was just more runs being scored instead of it being stale, which, like, maybe that was a plus for Major League Baseball. Clearly not enough that they included it in this new CBA. I'm glad it's gone. Because I know there was also some talk about what was the ghost thing that was brought up last week? There was ghost wins or ghost runs, something that the players had brought up in these negotiations. I can't think of it right now.
How to like tabulate these results when they're under these circumstances. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just all like, I was like, stop giving stuff for free. You know, like I want the players to actually have to go out there and make these things happen rather than we're just gifting it and it's going to count some against pitchers and then, you know, like having to figure all that stuff out. I didn't like it. I'm glad it's gone. I'm glad that as much as we love Max Fried in the box hitting for the Braves, overall, we reached the playoffs and there was multiple times, especially for the Braves, where we were all on the edge of our seat going, oh, man. Like, I was so excited for this big moment in the fifth or sixth inning, and then, oh, it's a pitcher spot, so that third out, well, all right, that one's going to be easy. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about that anymore. It also, it
and
opens
it changes
up.
For hitters that are hitting eighth, it changes the way that they get pitched to as well. And it just it deteriorates the quality of their at-bats.
Well, it opens up a roster spot, essentially. I like, not literally, like, the number of players stays the same, but for National League teams like the Braves, there was so many times when you had to have a guy in the lineup play out in the field. You did not want playing out in the field because he was a liability, that you don't have to worry about that now. I think it makes the game better. I'm also excited for they're not banning shifts after 2023. They are restricting shifts. Which I haven't done a whole lot of look into that, but I'll be curious to see what that is considered. I'm assuming, you know, second baseman, shortstop will have to stay on their side of second base sort of deal, which should increase numbers. I don't know if
outfielders actually probably can't come in.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that they'll do that because we started to see more of that as last season went on.
And I think, you know, it's just one of those ideas that you don't want to restrict offense. And so, you know, giving as much opportunity for runs to be scored is better for the game, I think. And so I think it makes sense. The bigger base thing too, odd. I don't think anybody was really concerned about that. I'm not really sure why it was the owners who were pushing bigger bases. I think there's this idea that more guys will steal if there are bigger bases. But it's because it's not really even a safety thing, because a safety thing would be putting like
a double base
does
on first base. Yeah.
So it's not really a safety thing. I was a bit confused by that, but you know, it's one of those when you're going through all of these negotiations,
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it. And honestly, I understand the players to an extent who kind of reached a point of like, okay, whatever. I did find it interesting, and this is a little thing that I won't stay on very long because I know we've got other stuff we want to talk about. I found it interesting that we got towards the end of labor negotiations, and it was something that actually affected international players and a lot of Latin players that became a point of contention with this whole international draft that the owners tried to slip in, that it seems like, from my understanding, they're going to They've got a plan tentatively that they're going to revisit later down the line to kind of figure out what they're going to do with the international draft.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like that was a big thing that international players, that Latin players essentially were big time against, when you so often see those guys are so hungry to play in the major leagues that they sign lesser deals. I mean, we've got two playing for the Braves right now, Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna, who took much smaller deals than we would have assumed their value is, just because those guys wanted to play. So I found it interesting that you were dealing with a group of players who you would most likely assume they just want to get back to the sport, and yet it was like an issue that affected them that almost threw a wrench into things.
Right there
at the end.
I can tell you from, you know, I do a lot of work in soccer and pretty well versed in soccer, which is a much more, like baseball, very international sport, probably the most international sport, you know, a draft is such a foreign concept for a foreign player, and like you, like being kind of designated to go to a certain team, I think doesn't make a lot of sense for them. Like, they want to have their own agency in choosing where they go. Just like, yes, it's like free agency for like a, you know, for a, yeah, for a player, for a domestic player.
I would argue that the draft is pretty un-American.
It is. If we start
thinking about
commie
the fact
sports,
of, you know, it's so interesting that and this gets brought up. And I remember being in high school when I was listening to a podcast of a guy that I really respected, and he brought up this idea that blew my mind at the time. Because, like, we love the draft, you know, like the NFL draft gets so much coverage. Major League Baseball draft doesn't get that much coverage. And it is lesser than the NBA draft, you know, the NFL draft kind of reigning supreme. But it's so fascinating how we love that. And yet it is a completely un-American thought that you have no say in where you get to work, and you're stuck there. Which is part of this whole thing that the players were negotiating, this whole arbitration period. You're stuck there for what was 6 years in Major League Baseball. That it seems so odd before you can actually get a second contract and go pick where you want to go. And international players were able to do that right out of the gate.
When you start dealing with international markets, it becomes very hard for a single entity like Major League Baseball to control. So like, they can only control so much. They can only control their own organization, their own product. So, you know, and that's why we end up seeing soccer. It's like the kind of the most capitalistic landscape of any sport, because you're dealing with different leagues and there's no like overarching commissioner for that, you know. There's not like a
governing body.
There's a governing body of soccer. I mean, there is FIFA, but like, that's more regarding international nations and countries, and not, you know, leagues in particular. So what you end up with is like cash transaction sales and things like that. So anyway, that's all. The only reason to say that is just because like, that is kind of the perspective that these international players would have, and their agents would want, you know. Yeah, so it's a kind of a whole different can of worms there when you're talking about like an international draft and what kind of negotiations would happen on that front. But that's something that they'll figure out down the line. I think they gave themselves to like sometime in July or sometime this summer to figure that out.
Yeah, July 24th, if I remember that date correctly. The big idea that was going on, and this international draft is included in this, is the owners were pushing this idea that we've got to restrict and place caps on everything so that spending and that player talent doesn't get so out of control that you've got, you know, teams at the top who are powerhouses and then teams at the bottom that have no chance. However, some of the things that they're doing, I personally don't think would make that happen. I think teams that want to spend money are going to spend money, and teams that want to be cheap are going to be cheap. And that's not really going to change no matter what restrictions you put on things. But just for people listening, like, that was the overarching theme that was a point of conflict, is the players pushing for, you know, we want free range. We want as much as the market allows, versus the owners going, no, we want to place restrictions because we want to keep things competitive and keep things going out of control. Just to touch on some stuff that we had already discussed, opening day, April 7th, they're going to do the pennant unveil. I believe it is the next day, April 8th, that they're doing the World Series, or no, April 9th is when they're doing the World Series ring unveiling. I, Joe Patrick, have already purchased tickets to April 11th's game because, for the first 40,000 people, they're giving out replica World Series rings.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, I was there when they did that a few seasons ago for the 95 World Series. It sits on my little bookshelf here.
Oh, there it is.
With all of my, yeah. Yeah. So it's one of those, like, you know, I
bookshelf's got no books on it.
It doesn't. You know, I shouldn't call it a bookshelf. It is a bobblehead shelf.
It's a bobblehead shelf.
Yeah. But Yeah, so the 11th is when they're doing the replica World Series giveaway. They're doing a whole bunch of giveaways to start out the season. You can tell also the fact that people are so excited for baseball to be back, because when I looked at tickets last night after everything was announced, baseball was back, the home opener on April the 7th is those tickets, cheap seats are going for like $85. So, and cheap seats,
wow,
just a couple of nights later are going for 20, you know. Wow. So you see, like, people are truly excited to see the pennant unveiled, to get baseball back, to get to see the World Series champs again. Like, it's so funny that we got to have this big moment, and then immediately jumped into fighting and quarreling, and there's going to be no baseball, and you guys better settle in because it's going to take forever. And so it's nice that we're that we're back.
So I want to kind of bring this back around. So and this ties into spring training and the schedule. So players, by the way, are expected to start arriving. Players around baseball can start arriving today at their spring training sites. I would expect many to arrive today or maybe tomorrow. Of course, you know, just depends on how long it takes to get your crap together and get ready to leave your family for a month. But I know I would be dragging, probably, most likely. Mandatory reporting is by the 13th, so I mean all players have to report to their camps by in a couple days here, essentially Sunday, by the end of the weekend. So things are going to get ramped up really quickly. The first spring training games will be played a week from today, next Friday, March 18th. And obviously this means if your spring training is from March 18th to April 7th, that is a very compressed timeline for a spring training. That's like, it's basically half a spring training. And so I want to bring this back to something that you were saying earlier with regards to the CBA, which is, you know, this universal DH kind of opens up a roster spot, or like it creates a roster, a need on the roster for all these NL teams, some of which probably feel like they already have that covered with somebody who was on their bench or whatnot. Some teams need to go out there and get a new one. But the bottom line is that you have to essentially designate a spot on the roster for that player. And to bring this back to the spring training piece, you only have 3 weeks to get ready for the season. That is not enough time for a starting pitcher to get stretched out how he wants to be. I mean, even in a full spring training, a starting pitcher probably only stretched out to go 5-6 innings. So these pitchers, I feel like these teams, and the Braves are one of these, that are going to have to really add more pitchers to the opening day roster to be able to cover the innings that they're going to need to be able to cover, including, you know, more long relievers that might need to go, you know, longer distance, because these pitchers just aren't going to be stretched out to the point where you can kind of construct your team how you would expect it to look midseason. And of course, that's kind of always the case on opening day, but I just feel like this spring training schedule is really putting a crunch on these pitchers, and teams around the league are, and especially in the NL, teams are really going to have to, you know, keep an eye on that, of course, but then also obviously have that designated hitter roster spot ready to go. So it's going to be an interesting crunch for a lot of these teams.
So the one thing I'm going to push back on you a little bit is the idea of not being able to get stretched out and the amount of time that they're given. I think it's going to be less of an issue this year than it was during the COVID season. And this is not an original thought. This is actually something that Bob Nightingale was on with John Chuckery on our station last night, and he pointed out the fact that during the COVID-shortened season, players were like straight up chilling on the couch, just like, you know what, COVID's going on, there's no way we're going to play. And so then when that finally got ramped up, guys were having to like work out just to get into shape to then pitch, to then play a season. Right now we're dealing with something different where, by all accounts, most guys have been practicing, have been training, have been getting ready for the season. The training facilities are open. It's not like those are restricted like they were back during the COVID season. So guys should be ready. They may not. The bigger issue is going to be the fact that you've now got less than a month to sign all the free agents you're going to have on your baseball team. You know, obviously the one that we're going to get into before we get out of here is this idea of what's going to happen with Freddie Freeman. But it's like, that's not the only need the Braves have. They've got to sign some other guys pitching specifically that they've got to do pretty quickly, but they have to be careful, Joe. And the reason why there haven't been any big announcements signed yet is because players and ownership were not allowed to talk during this period. Now, did they? Absolutely. You know those conversations between agents and ownership were happening. However, they couldn't technically do it. So no team right now wants to be the first one to be like, oh, yeah, just in the last couple hours, we worked this deal out.
Would have been hilarious if some team was, like, not thinking about this and was just like...
Like 701.
Yes, and like, here he... Yeah. Yeah. The Mets signed the player, it. And then everybody's like, what the hell?
Yeah. Oh, and there would have... Yeah, you know, sanctions would have been... Played, you know? Like, you know, they would have been losing some...
But yeah, it does seem like nobody... It seems like no team wants to be the first one to be like... All right, I think there will be deals starting to happen today. Actually, that's my guess.
We are recording the morning of Friday, March 11th. Like, deals are going to happen later today, most likely through the weekend. The big one, we hope. At least I assume. I don't know where you stand on this, Joe, but we hope is that Freddie Freeman is back with the Braves. There's obviously
They don't need that guy.
there's obviously been all this discussion about you know, does he come back or was he wooed by teams to maybe go to, I mean, shoot, it's been the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Rays, all of this other stuff, and I was laughing this whole time that baseball was in a lockout because I was going, guys, they can't technically talk to each other, so it's nothing more than some conversations that they have anytime a player is a free agent. And B, like, there's no reason, unless all of the stuff, like when Chipper Jones came on our airwaves and said, oh, Freddie didn't like the deals that he was given at first. You know, he thought they were a little unfair low on his, you know, end. And I'm thinking... Yeah, but once baseball actually gets back and we know what kind of money can be spent, I think they're going to throw a big fat deal at Freddie Freeman, a fair market deal, because you know Alex Anthopoulos likes to be thrifty, but I think this is an area where, because they saved in so many other areas, they can spend, and I think Freddie Freeman will be back. I don't think all of this worry that's been happening when especially Buster Olney came through and was like, oh no, I think he might be going to the Yankees.
That was the worst. I did all these radio hits after that happened, just try to calm everybody down, because everybody was in a frenzy. And like, I kind of understand why, because you see, it was so fascinating. It was like a perfect case study in watching a rumor just like explode on the internet. Yeah. Whereas like, Buster Olney has this one line in his report that covered a multitude of different things, by the way.
Sure.
And then MLB on Fox, you know, like all these different like big platforms, I guess you would call them, on Twitter, big verified accounts, like corporate accounts, are like reposting this with like full-on graphics and everything. Just crazy to see that one little nugget like that get exploded into a full-blown rumor. Or report, really.
It happens all the time. And the thing I was getting people asking, texting me, going, oh, do you think he's actually going to go? You know, he's actually going to leave. And I was going, why are we any more afraid right now than we were a couple months ago?
Right. Like, it's like, did you think that before that report came out, like, he was never leaving? Like, I've always been of the mind that whenever, if you're a free agent, there's a good chance you could leave, you know? Like, and I don't think that's going to happen in this case, but. The Buster Olney report didn't change anything. And, you know, John Heyman, I feel like, is constantly talking about how the Yankees are involved and whatnot. You know, it's just like...
Yeah, well, my thing was, this was the epitome of reporters who were tired of and had no more real information on the lockout. Like, it was at where it was at.
Mm-hmm,
and then it was like, you know what? We need some baseball news to talk about. Well, I mean, I have heard... that Freddie Freeman was talking to these teams. And it's like, oh, okay.
And the other piece of this is I don't get the idea that any of these national reporters have good ties to the Braves. I think the Braves are one of the best teams at not leaking. And so if they're not getting anything from the Braves, maybe they're getting something from the Yankees that's like, yeah, we're you know, like we, you know, doing this and this. And so then you say, oh, well, the Yankees are you know, hot after whatever it is. You know, I'm not even like citing a specific report or anything. But yeah, I think it just speaks to the reason why there seems to be so much like snowballing momentum for Freddie Freeman leaving Atlanta is simply because Atlanta is not discussing the issue. They're not leaking any of their talks or feelings that they have about it to anybody.
Yeah,
and well, so writers are just going to go elsewhere for their reports and rumors.
Also, this might be a little rude, but it's pretty much the laziest thing ever to attach a top free agent to teams that have the most money to spend. It's literally just the easiest thing to do. It's just to be like, I mean, you know, could go to the Yankees, could go to the Dodgers. Now, the Dodgers linked, obviously, there's something there just for the fact that that's where Freddie's from, and that's where he has a house. And I think, you know, even it was pointed out that it'd be like a 45-minute drive from his house to Dodger Stadium. And so it's like, okay, I get he could be tempted. However, it just there seems like there's no reason for that to go anywhere. If it does, I'm going to be honest with you, Joe. I'm going to make this a positive spin, whatever happens. Like, Freddie goes, they didn't need that old guy.
On to the next one. That's the old college football recruiting. On to the next one.
Exactly. Well, we've already figured out what potential the next one could be with this whole idea that they could trade for Oakland A's first baseman Matt Olson, which is one of those that I love. It was also pointed out this week of, you know, the Braves aren't going to be the only team looking to trade for a first baseman. They'd also have to give up prospects to do it, whereas you could just throw money at Freddie to bring him back. But so it's one of those, like, there's so much going on when it comes to this Freeman deal.
And, go ahead. And you were hitting on it earlier with regards to, like, Alex Anthopoulos and, you know, why maybe this has taken so long for them to do the deal. And, you know, I think that I totally agree that Alex Anthopoulos, not only is he looking for a deal, but I think that, you know, he's just one of those guys who wants all the information in front of him before he makes a decision on something. And in this case, we actually do have some substantial things that could change the calculus, and one of them may be in Freddie Freeman's favor, which is this whole, you know, restricting of shifts that could benefit Freddie Freeman. He can legitimately say, like, well, you know, my numbers would be projected to go up in some of these circumstances, and so, you know, maybe I should be making this much instead of this much. But these are exactly the kinds of reasons why somebody like Alex Anthopoulos would have wanted to wait. And of course, there's all the other, like, you know, financial constructs around the CBA that are very important when you're considering making a financial deal to somebody for their contract. But I'm not surprised that that they would elect to wait until after they see what the new CBA landscape looks like before they start really having really serious talks about, you know, the final pieces of what it would take to put a deal together. So it's not surprising to me necessarily that it's taking this long. Like, don't get me wrong, I thought that this would have gotten done like a year ago, but since it didn't get done at that time, I'm not surprised that it's gotten to this point. So, I'm still very much in favor of, like, I'm in the camp that Freddie Freeman is extremely important to the organization over a Matt Olson. Like, if you compare their numbers, Matt Olson and Freddie Freeman profile very similarly. If you look on their Statcast numbers and you look at, like, things like their hard hit rate, their walk rate, you know, like all these kinds of metrics, they actually do line up very similarly. And I think that is, you know, one of the reasons why he's been labeled as, you know, the successor to Freddie Freeman if he's not to return to the Braves. And you get a lot of things with Matt Olson that's, you know, kind of better than Freddie in terms of his age. Still has 2 years of arbitration, like control, those kinds of things. Yeah. So there are some things going in Matt Olson's favor, but when I think about this, I keep going back to one of the post-game press conferences that Brian Snicker did after last season, during last postseason, in one of the postseason press conferences. He was talking about, like, somebody asked a question about Freddie, like, his importance to the team or whatever, and Snit was, like, very open, saying that, like, when he has, like, a question, he goes to Freddie. Like they have, like, talks about the team on, like, a deeper level than just, like, talking to one of your players. It really seems to me like he's so important for as much credit as Brian Snicker gets for managing the clubhouse, you know, throughout the year and keeping everybody on even keel or whatever, keeping the mood high, or at least just, you know, consistent throughout the season, I think Freddie Freeman really is a huge part of that. And by the way, I'm the kind of person who, before I started covering this team professionally, kind of really poo-pooed a lot of this kind of talking points. Like, I just like didn't think it was that important. I was much more focused on the stats and the numbers and all that kind of stuff. But as I've been able to kind of experience it for myself, being inside the clubhouse in 2019, and then just, you know, experiencing more and more, it really does show the importance that doesn't show up on a stat sheet that somebody like Freddie Freeman has to an organization like the Braves. So I think it's very important that they do get that deal done. I think that a lot of fans would obviously feel very much spurned if they don't get the deal done. Maybe some don't. But I think just the Braves, especially coming off a World Series like they did, I just think it's very important that they keep the vibes up, keep the momentum high for the organization, because I think we're just starting to see the tip of the iceberg in terms of what could be truly like a dynasty in the way that the Dodgers have kind of been like a dynasty over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on point. I completely agree with your assessment of it's that leadership quality that Freddie brings. I mean, there's just, you go all the way back to when they had the championship parade and they get into Truist Park, and what do multiple Braves players who, you know, may or may not be on this team, what did they have to say? You know, bring Freddie back, re-sign Freddie. It was kind of this, like, he is that loved amongst the team, and you're right, he is that point between, you know, management and team coaches and everything. Like, he is a link that I think is extremely valuable.
He is like a manager on the field. He's almost like a player manager.
Absolutely. And so you're paying for that as well as the production on the field, benefiting from the fact that he could, it would have been harder to pay him if the DH didn't come to the National League, because I think, you know, that just shortens up the possibility of him being able to stay out in the field, whereas it perfectly aligns to, he can go from his first baseman's role to an everyday DH sort of scenario. And you know, the team will be just fine. That leadership quality is so important, as you know, you talk about being in the clubhouse. I agree with you that if I hadn't, you know, I cover a different team in Atlanta who's recently had some struggles with, you know, leadership and things not working out very well. And so seeing when that works well and you can win a championship with that, just feels like Freddie should be rewarded, even if they maybe technically overpay for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of those, just do it. However, like, go ahead.
Well, another thing that came to my mind was everybody gave the Braves so much plaudits for those deals that you mentioned earlier, where they signed Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie mm-hmm. Albies to deals that were, like, you know, a lot of people say they're, like, you know, borderline, like, robbery, like, you know, and that's really great for the Braves, but I feel like the way you capitalize on making those great deals by then using the money that you saved in those deals to keep the core of the team together, you know, and, you know, you can kind of, I guess it's just a way to justify spending on whatever you need on Freddie Freeman. But I do think that it's an important piece.
Absolutely. But like I said, Joe, and I'm going to spin it either way. Go ahead.
I want to say one more thing about Freddie, because you were talking about, you know, how he ages and whatnot, and, you know, how the DH plays involved. I think he's going to age relatively well. I'm sure everybody thinks that, like, they're, you know, like, the star player of a team is going to age well, because it's hard to envision them like their bat speed deteriorating and everything that we know happens, but we haven't yet seen. But I just feel like the natural hitter that Freddie is, the way he uses his hands, like, when you see him take BP, he's always, like, hitting balls the other way. And granted, he doesn't really do that in games so much, but I really feel like he could be a guy that ages relatively well, especially in a DH role, can still give you like, not going to go into the tank like Albert Pujols style.
Yeah, maybe.
This is wishful thinking on my part. I have no way to back this up. I'm just trying to elevate the mood here.
Sure. No, I get concerned about injuries with him. I worry about that as he ages. But
that's a good point. I mean, well, I was gonna say, He's been amazing since he had those bone spurs removed after the 2019 season. He's been like incredible.
Yeah. So I just, you know, it's one of those things that I would monitor with him. Is I just, you know, I worry about the injuries, but if that doesn't become a problem, I would agree with you that I think, you know, he could age gracefully.
He's played a lot in his career, to your point, just in terms of the wear and tear, never missing a game.
Yeah, that, but that's the whole built into his DNA thing that they pushed at the end of last year.
Maybe that's where the DH could come in handy, though, for him.
Yeah, that's what I honestly think. Well, for all of our listeners, there's a lot more that we're going to be getting to over these next few weeks. I mean, honestly, it's
we'll have so many transactions to talk about by the time we do this next week.
Exactly.
Early next week.
I was about to say, yeah, I think you should be expecting another podcast from us. I'm assuming it'll come out like Monday night.
Probably Monday night, Tuesday at the latest, but probably sometime Monday.
Yeah. And then start expecting that Monday afternoon to Monday evening release from us coming every week, as we'll, like Joe said, we'll have so much each time until the season ramps up, because there's just going to be a lot of change. There's also a lot of discussion for Joe and I to have over what this team is going to look like, whether it's, you know, positions of need like the outfield, pitching, what happens at DH, all of those things. You know, there's going to be so much to cover that we're going to try to break it up.
It's
positionally
exciting. I'm so excited to talk about
episode
it all.
Episode by episode, we're gonna try to, you know, try to break all that stuff down. But before we get out of here, Joe, is there anything else you wanted to get to?
No, I just want to say I'm really excited for everybody to be on board. We're gonna be talking, basically going like through positions, breaking down the whole rotation, the bullpen, all that kind of stuff in future episodes before opening day gets underway. So just really excited for everybody to hop on board and enjoy the ride, and we'll get baseball back, man. So it's fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Thanks for listening to the Batter Up Podcast.
All right. I got to run out of here. Shit. I should.
That's why. But so it's one of those, like, there's so much going on when it comes to this Freeman deal.
And,
go ahead.
And you were hitting on it earlier with regards to, like, Alex Anthopoulos and, you know, why maybe this has taken so long for them to do the deal. And, you know, I think that I totally agree that Alex Anthopoulos, not only is he looking for a deal, but I think that, you know, he's just one of those guys who wants all the information in front of him before he makes a decision on something. And in this case, we actually do have some substantial things that could change the calculus, and one of them may be in Freddie Freeman's favor, which is this whole, you know, restricting of shifts that could benefit Freddie Freeman. He can legitimately say, like, well, you know, my numbers would be projected to go up in some of these circumstances, and so, you know, maybe I should be making this much instead of this much. But these are exactly the kinds of reasons why somebody like Alex Anthopoulos would have wanted to wait. And of course, there's all the other, like, you know, financial constructs around the CBA that are very important when you're considering making a financial deal to somebody for their contract. But I'm not surprised that that they would elect to wait until after they see what the new CBA landscape looks like before they start really having really serious talks about, you know, the final pieces of what it would take to put a deal together. So it's not surprising to me necessarily that it's taking this long. Like, don't get me wrong, I thought that this would have gotten done like a year ago, but since it didn't get done at that time, I'm not surprised that it's gotten to this point. So, very much in favor of, like, I'm in the camp that Freddie Freeman is extremely important to the organization over a Matt Olson. Like, if you compare their numbers, Matt Olson and Freddie Freeman profile very similarly. If you look on their StatCast numbers and you look at, like, things like their hard hit rate, their walk rate, you know, like all these kinds of metrics, they actually do line up very similarly. And I think that that is, you know, one of the reasons why he's been labeled as, you know, the successor to Freddie Freeman if he's not to return to the Braves. And you get a lot of things with Matt Olson that's, you know, kind of better than Freddie in terms of his age. Still has 2 years of arbitration, like control, those kinds of things. Yeah. So there are some things going in Matt Olson's favor, but when I think about this, I keep going back to one of the post-game press conferences that Brian Snicker did after last season, during last postseason, in one of the postseason press conferences. He was talking about, like, somebody asked a question about Freddie and, like, his importance to the team or whatever, and Snit was, like, very open, saying that, like, when he has, like, a question, he goes to Freddie. Like, they have, like, talks about the team on like a deeper level than just like talking to one of your players. It really seems to me like he's so important for as much credit as Brian Snicker gets for managing the clubhouse, you know, throughout the year and keeping everybody on even keel or whatever, keeping the mood high, or at least just, you know, consistent throughout the season. I think Freddie Freeman really is a huge part of that. And by the way, I'm the kind of person who, before I started covering this team professionally, kind of really poo-pooed a lot of this kind of talking points. Like, I just like didn't think it was that important. I was much more focused on the stats and the numbers and all that kind of stuff. But as I've been able to kind of experience it for myself, being inside the clubhouse in 2019, and then just, you know, experiencing more and more, it really does show the importance that doesn't show up on a stat sheet that somebody like Freddie Freeman has to an organization like the Braves. So I think it's very important that they do get that deal done. I think that a lot of fans would obviously feel very much spurned if they don't get the deal done. Maybe some don't. But I think just the Braves, especially coming off a World Series like they did, I just think it's very important that they keep the vibes up, keep the momentum high for the organization, because I think we're just starting to see the tip of the iceberg in terms of what could be truly like a dynasty in the way that the Dodgers have kind of been like a dynasty over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on point. I completely agree with your assessment of it's that leadership quality that Freddie brings. I mean, there's just, you go all the way back to when they had the championship parade and they get into Truist Park, and what do multiple Braves players who, you know, may or may not be on this team, what did they have to say? You know, bring Freddie back, re-sign Freddie. It was kind of this, like, he is that loved amongst the team, and you're right, he is that point between, you know, management and team coaches and everything. Like, he is a link that I think is extremely valuable.
He is like a manager on the field. He's almost like a player manager.
Absolutely. And so you're paying for that as well as the production on the field, benefiting from the fact that he could. It would have been harder to pay him if the DH didn't come to the National League, because I think, you know, that just shortens up the possibility of him being able to stay out in the field, whereas it perfectly aligns to he can go from his first baseman's role to an everyday DH sort of scenario, and, you know, the team will be just fine. That leadership quality is so important, as you know, you talk about being in the clubhouse. I agree with you that if I hadn't, you know, I cover a different team in Atlanta who's recently had some struggles with, you know, leadership and things not working out very well. And so seeing when that works well and you can win a championship with that just feels like Freddie should be rewarded, even if they maybe technically overpay for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of those, just do it. However, like, go ahead.
Well, another thing that came to my mind was everybody gave the Braves so much plaudits for those deals that you mentioned earlier, where they signed Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie mm-hmm. Albies to deals that were like, you know, a lot of people say they're like, you know, borderline like robbery, like, you know, and that's really great for the Braves. But I feel like the way you capitalize on making those great deals by then using the money that you saved in those deals to keep the core of the team together, you know, and, you know, you can kind of, I guess it's just a way to justify spending on whatever you need on Freddie Freeman. But I do think that it's an important piece.
Absolutely. But like I said, Joe, and I'm going to spin it either way. Go ahead.
I want to say one more thing about Freddie, because you were talking about, you know, how he ages and whatnot, and, you know, how the DH plays involved. I think he's going to age relatively well. I'm sure everybody thinks that, like, they're, you know, like the star player of a team is going to age well, because it's hard to envision them like their bat speed deteriorating and everything that we know happens, but we haven't yet seen. But I just feel like the natural hitter that Freddie is, the way he uses his hands, like when you see him take BP, he's always like hitting balls the other way. And granted, he doesn't really do that in games so much, but I really feel like he could be a guy that ages relatively well, especially in a DH role, can still give you not going to go into the tank like Albert Pujols style.
Yeah, maybe.
This is wishful thinking on my part. I have no way to back this up. I'm just trying to elevate the mood here.
Sure. No, I get concerned about injuries with him. I worry about that as he ages. But
that's a good point. I mean, well, I was going to say, since, like, he's been amazing since he had those bone spurs removed after the 2019 season. He's been, like, incredible.
Yeah. So I just, you know, it's one of those things that I would monitor with him is I just, you know, I worry about the injuries, but if that doesn't become a problem, I would agree with you that I think, you know, he could age gracefully.
He's played a lot in his career, to your point, just in terms of the wear and tear, never missing a game.
Yeah, that. But that's the whole built into his DNA thing that they pushed at the end of last year.
Maybe that's where the DH could come in handy, though, for him.
Yeah, that's what I honestly think. Well, for all of our listeners, there's a lot more that we're going to be getting to over these next few weeks. I mean, honestly, it's
and we'll just have so many transactions to talk about by the time we do this next week.
Exactly.
Early next week.
I was about to say, yeah, I think you should be expecting another podcast from us. I'm assuming it'll come out like Monday night.
Probably Monday night, Tuesday at the latest, but probably sometime Monday.
Yeah. And then start expecting that Monday afternoon to Monday evening release from us coming every week as we'll, like Joe said, we'll have so much each time until the season ramps up because there's just going to be a lot of change. There's also a lot of discussion for Joe and I to have over what this team is going to look like, whether it's, you know, positions of need like the outfield, pitching, what happens at DH, all of those things. You know, there's going to be so much to cover that we're going to try to break it up.
It's positionally exciting. I'm so excited to talk about
episode
it all.
Episode by episode, we're gonna try to, you know, try to break all that stuff down. But before we get out of here, Joe, is there anything else you wanted to get to?
No, I just want to say I'm really excited for everybody to be on board. We're gonna be talking, basically going like through positions, breaking down the whole rotation, the bullpen, all that kind of stuff in future episodes before opening day gets underway. So just really excited for everybody to hop on board and enjoy the ride and get baseball back, man. So it's fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Thanks for listening to the Batter Up Podcast.
All right, I got to run out of here. Shit, I should.
That's why.